Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. We're delighted to have you here. Thank you so much for listening. Today, we are going to revisit a topic that we addressed a few episodes ago, which is about the future, but we're going to go more into kind of detail about short-term vision for the future just over the next few decades and what we are doing in order to advance non-theist paganism within the pagan community and the values and ideas of non-theist paganism in the society at large. So that's what we're going to talk about today on The Wonder. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Mark.
And I'm Yucca. And it's great to be talking with you again, Mark.
Always a pleasure, yeah. Yucca.
So we'll go ahead and add a link in the show notes to that previous episode if you missed it. But do you want to recap a little bit of what we were... It seemed like we both had some common visions for the future, particularly in how humans could be living much more harmoniously with our overall environment. What were some of the other things in there?
Well, a lot of what we talked about actually was the impending collapse. It seems pretty evident based on the ecology's inability, the world's ecology writ large, its inability to sustain industrial capitalism and all the ways that industrial capitalism is failing the population of humanity, that something's going to give, and it's going to give relatively soon. So we were talking about what's our vision for the future of humanity after that happens, after those systems start to break down. And we talked about more collectivism, people living together in larger communities and sharing resources. We talked about a deeper relationship with the production of food and people's sense of relationship with the earth as producing the food and the oxygen and everything that we need to live. I don't want to go over everything that we talked about then, and I can't remember all of it actually. But it was an interesting episode, and I do commend it to people that are interested in those kinds of topics.
Yeah. So coming to today, so looking at the 20 to 30 years and then even sooner, right? Maybe looking at the 5 to 10 year range. One of the things that really stands out for me in what we did talk about and now is the sense of community, right? All of those things really rely on a feeling of community and an alternative options than just the model which is collapsing right now.
Yes.
Our industrial model. So what are the options do we have and how do we communicate that and share that in a way that's going to be empowering and joyful and not something that people are just being forced and shoved into out of desperation?
Yeah, I think there's a combination of both of those that's going to happen at once, because the reality is that fewer and fewer people have the resources to buy houses, for example. Fewer and fewer people have the resources to live in single family detached houses in nuclear families of mom, dad, and the kids. That is not the typical household, at least in the United States, any longer. Mm-hmm. We have many single parents. We have many people living with extended family because they're taking care of elderly parents or grandparents, or grandparents are taking care of grandkids because the parents can't. So our understanding of what constitutes a family is really evolving. In fact, it's evolving more slowly than the actual changes are happening. It's kind of struggling to catch up. And with the advent of same-sex marriage, now we're really having a conversation in our society about the definition of marriage and whether or not it has to be locked into a model that supposedly comes down from antiquity, but really only started in about 1948. So that's one of the pieces, one of the ways that I see things changing in a really positive sense. People are less invested in a conventional model of how they're supposed to behave and live. And they're making choices based on what actually feels right to them. And that involves polyamorous relationships. It involves various mixed kinds of families of all different kinds, you know, people that are, you know, where the ex still lives in because that's the most rational thing for raising the kids, you know, all those different kinds of combinations. And one of the things that I find very encouraging about that is that many, not all, but many people are learning much better, kinder communication skills in order to live in those kinds of complicated communities. And less of this, my home is my castle, leave me alone mentality that seems to dominate so much of America right now.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that stood out to me in what you were just saying was the people coming to a point where they're feeling more comfortable, more empowered working with something that feels better for them, that works better for them. And that's one of the themes that we come back to quite often when we're talking about paganism, that's one of the places where people do feel that they can start expressing themselves and having a spirituality or an understanding of the world that makes more sense to them and feels more rewarding.
Yes. And a part of that, I think, is that the institutions that were able to enforce a punitive kind of approach to religion and spirituality are waning in their influence. And surprisingly enough, people don't volunteer to be punished if given a choice. Most of them. Some of them do.
Luckily a minority, I'd say, but
yes, yeah. Yes. And for them, we have therapy and lots of love. Mm-hmm. But many people are looking at these very old kind of creaky institutions with value sets that really do not jibe with the world of the modern era at all. And they're saying, I can do better than that. I can do better just out on my own. And so they may leave, say, a conservative Abrahamic religious background. And then they discover that alone is not such a great state for humans. Mm-hmm. And some of them stay alone and maybe take up consumerism as their religion and the acquisition of things as a source of satisfaction for themselves. But many will seek community and they'll seek something that has deeper meaning and purpose in it. And that, I think, is why so many people are flocking towards non-theist paganism. On the Atheopagan Facebook group, I have regular communications from people saying, oh, wow, I thought I was the only one. I can't believe I found you people. It's like Christmas.
It's a shared experience for me as well. Constantly finding people excited to go, oh, I'm not alone. Wow. Oh, I can be a pagan and just be into nature, into ritual, into this and not have to bring all that other stuff in with it.
Yeah. Right. I don't have to sign on the dotted line that I subscribe to a creed that, you know, forces me to say, oh yes, I believe in these invisible beings and mm-hmm. I believe in these magical
initiation
powers.
To it. Yeah.
Right. And there are many who, for the sake of community and ritual practice, will, you know, they will make those kinds of oaths, but I think a little part of us dies a little bit when we do something that solemn and serious and we don't really believe. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard. And I understand that people who are theists in the pagan community are very passionate about that, and that's great. But for those of us who aren't, there's a place to go. And part of the reason that this podcast exists is as a way of telegraphing within the pagan community that there is a place to go. You can be an atheist, a non-believer who subscribes to the scientific method and critical thinking and Occam's razor and believes in nothing other than what the scientific process has revealed of the universe. And you can be a perfectly good pagan in good standing and celebrate your holidays and do your rituals and dance around a fire naked if you want to. And you'll have a great time. And it'll be good for your life. It'll help you to be a wiser and more kind person. And you'll be in a community of really amazing people, because the pagan community really is full of amazing people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that would be my first vision for the coming decades is, you know, opening up the awareness within the pagan community of the option of being a non-theist and pagan. And I would love to see more acceptance around that. I'd love to see it be a less charged kind of topic, as it really still is very much so.
It is, but I will say, relative to 4 years ago, it's a lot less so.
Mm-hmm.
It is getting better.
That's great.
There are people who are very defensive when confronted with non-theism, because the idea that someone doesn't believe in their gods is just, it's threatening and it makes them defensive. I don't particularly understand why, because why I should have to believe in their gods, I don't know why that's important, but apparently, you know, it's a real affront for many people that I do not,
that I
don't subscribe.
It's threatening to the identity, the story that we have about ourselves, which as creatures that think and communicate so much in symbols, I mean, I understand why it is, because you not believing in it, I think might cause a little bit of a question in the back of their mind is it, well, this other person doesn't buy it, so is it true? Is it legitimate? Am I, you know, so it can threaten the foundation of their story about themselves.
I think you're right. Yeah. I do. I think you're right about that. And there are people who, particularly it, apparently for reasons that are mysterious to me, but apparently particularly in the Reconstructionist area of the pagan community, there are people who are just furious at the prospect that non-theists would even be considered pagans. Mm-hmm. And mostly they seem like pretty angry people who don't seem very happy to me. And seem more invested in going to war than in agreeing to disagree or finding common cause in other things. And I think that's a shame. But the same folks, I've heard some of the same folks argue that Wicca isn't pagan either. And so they may be making a finer and finer and finer mesh in order to gatekeep what they consider to be pagan. And I just think that's nonsense. The pagan community has always been very welcoming, and it continues to be, and it will continue to be. Their particular sects don't have to be, but one of the great things about the pagan community is that if you're in a place that's uncomfortable and they don't like you there, you can go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my experience is pagans will end up doing what they want to do, whether someone else is saying they should or shouldn't.
Yes. Very much so. To a fault.
Yeah.
To be honest, I mean, you know, I've spoken about this before, that within the pagan community, the emphasis on rights as opposed to responsibilities is really pretty out of balance.
Yeah.
The idea that we have responsibility to one another and to our society and by implication to the earth seems to get trumped by, yeah, but I want that trinket. Yeah, but I want that fancy altar thing. Yeah, but I want to drive a particular kind of snazzy car. Yeah, but I want to fly across the country to go to, you know, six different festivals this year. And there's an unconscious disconnect in that that I see in some folks who are practicing pagans that I would like to see put together. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see connected. But, you know, I'm not here to criticize how anybody else does it. I'm just here to say, we're doing it this way. And if that resonates for you, come on board. You're welcome. So you spoke about your vision for the next 20, 30 years within the pagan community. And my aspiration is more grandiose than that. I really want to see our values percolate into the broad culture.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And particularly around, you know, transcending postmodernism and getting over this idea that all ideas and opinions are equal, because they aren't. There are ideas that are supported by evidence and can be defended. And there are ideas like the idea that the earth is flat that are nonsense. Mm-hmm. There are factual truths about the universe. And we are having a real cultural battle right now about whether that is even a true statement. So being involved in the effort to separate church and state and to advance critical thinking and skepticism is something that I also see as really important for the non-theist pagan movement, which is a little bit different than for the rest of the pagan movement. We may make common cause with them around separation of church and state in order to protect minority religions. But that next step towards skepticism and critical thinking and all that, I think we're kind of on our own.
Mm. Yeah.
That's where we make much more common cause with the atheist community and organizations.
Yeah.
So when you think about, well, I mean, I know when you think about your next 5 years, you think about raising kids. But to the degree that you have energy or bandwidth to apply to the non-theist pagan movement that I know you're very committed to, and that's why you do this podcast and you're on the Pagan Perspective YouTube channel and so forth, what do you see yourself doing that will help us to get to that place that you see in 20 years?
Mm. Well, I think we are in this... We've talked about this before, but this pretty interesting place in history where we have such amazing ability to communicate with people all over, which is one of the things this podcast is, right? And the videos and all of that. And so I'm really interested in some of that online and virtual community aspect, helping us not feel quite as isolated and alone, even though we are immediate neighbors or some people's immediate family members might not really be on board. But knowing that, hey, I mean, it's not just that there are hundreds of us out there, we're in the thousands or more who share these values. So I definitely would love to continue being in that and helping to facilitate some of that happening. I also, in terms of what my family and I are doing with how we're trying to live with in a little bit more of not just a sustainable, but regenerative way, and helping to, you know, even though I'm a shy person, I try to share some of that to give back some of the inspiration that I've gotten from other people who have shared.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, a lot of that connecting with people, and there's so many ideas right now trying to pull down which threads to follow. But maybe doing classes or, you know, discussion groups, things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have an exciting thing that I'm working on mm-hmm. for the upcoming few years. And Yucca, I know, you know, you're also involved with it. You're helping on the working group to help put together the legal documents and so forth. But I'm happy to announce to this podcast that there is going to be an Atheopagan Society, which will be a legally recognized religious organization. It will not be a membership organization. You won't have to join it or pay any dues in order to be an Atheopagan. But the point of the organization will be to help support and foster Atheopaganism around the world, and to serve also as a voice and a repository for like the copyright for my book and the writings on the blog and so forth after I die, so that the movement has more legs than just relying on me. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a very natural next step, and there are so many things that you can do with an organization like that. You can have online classes. You can have local chapters that meet in person and do things. You can have events. You can sponsor events. You can write opinion statements on issues that are pertinent to the values of the organization. And
other publications as well, right?
Yes.
Doing the perhaps seasonal or quarterly, we haven't really decided on that, right? But the newsletters and things of that sort.
Right, exactly. And one thing that I'm excited to announce is that I've been working on a draft website for the Atheopagan Society. And one of the things you'll be able to do is to ordain yourself online, just as you can with the Universal Life Church. This organization will have the legal power to do that. And so, as with the Universal Life Church, for free, you can fill out a little form and confirm that you endorse the Atheopagan principles, and click a button, and then you are clergy. And in all 50 states of the nation, you are legally entitled to conduct weddings and prison ministry and hospital ministry and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like it's an important step for us to take. And I've been putting an awful lot of work into it in the last few weeks. It's exciting. And my hope is that by the end of 2020, we'll have our tax-exempt status and we'll really be able to start operating. So that's what I'm working on for the short term. And I really see it as an opportunity for that growing community of folks that we have online to have more in the way of resources and support.
Beautiful. And what about in the 20 to 30 year range? What do you see happening? What would be your vision for the society?
It's hard to imagine right now, but a re-embrace of expertise and science is something that I feel, I mean, particularly as the challenges that we come up against require scientific inquiry and discovery in order to address them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very interesting to me how quiet the anti-vaccine people are being right now as we all pray for a COVID-19 vaccine. Only the most sort of militant are sticking to their guns on this, because they realize that this is a very dangerous disease and they don't want themselves and their family to get it. So my hope is that 20, 30 years from now, we've begun to evolve our economies in a much more sustainable direction, because the impacts of climate change will be much more severe by then. And we'll be living primarily in more communal ways, which doesn't mean communes, but it means more people kind of forming pods of humans that have interdependence and mutual support and are able to take care of the business of living without the exhausting nature of working three jobs in a gig economy and barely making ends meet.
Mm-hmm. Based more on cooperation.
Yes.
Around our basic needs and
exactly so. Mm-hmm. So that's a part of my vision. I suspect that what is going to happen because of the conservative nature of the Supreme Court in the United States, and I should say, I'm seeing these problems happening all over the globe. But the United States is particularly egregious right now because of the madman that we have in the presidency.
Well, and as people who live here, we can speak more easily to what's happening in our own country because we're more aware of it as well.
Absolutely. Right? Yes. Yeah. I don't want to imply that what's going on elsewhere is less important somehow, though.
Yeah.
But all that I can speak to with any real confidence is what I know about my own country.
Yeah.
Where was I going with that?
Oh, the Supreme Court.
Oh, yes. It would not surprise me if the Supreme Court ruled that that marriage is not a federal issue, mm-hmm. and that therefore it's up to states whether to legalize same-sex marriage or not. Mm-hmm. And that would be a tragedy, and it would make me really, really angry. Mm. But if that were to happen, the silver lining could be that some states could get out of the marriage business entirely, meaning that marriage would be a religious institution, not a civil institution, and people could register as family units.
I think we never should have mixed the two. They're separate.
Clearly.
Right? Yeah.
Clearly.
And we're supposed to have separation of church and state, so
right.
Let's divide that. Yeah.
I mean, I have friends, I'm thinking of a particular group right now who are a married triad, and the amount of money they have had to spend on legal fees just in order to get all of their wills and their advance directives and all that stuff so that their children will be taken care of. It's ridiculous, and they have the resources to do it, but if they didn't, then they would be in a situation where if one of them got sick, maybe one of the other two wouldn't be allowed to visit them in the hospital. I mean, these are three people who are married to each other, and they have children, and the children are benefiting by there always being a parent around. Mm-hmm. The household is benefiting by there being three breadwinners. And everybody is doing fine. So having the laws of this, of the states or of the country, basically criminalize this with, you know, the barriers that it erects in order to prevent people from living in this way is super counterproductive. And I hope that within the next 20 or 30 years, there will be increasing recognition that love is love. And it's good no matter what it is, as long as it's among consenting adults. Mm-hmm. And people should be able to live however they want to and have it make them happy. And for government not to be in the way of that.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't call that I wouldn't call that central to non-theist paganism, but the pagan community has always been very welcoming and inclusive of sexual minorities. We have a disproportionate number of LGBTQ folks for exactly that reason, because we welcome folks like that. Yeah. They're people like everybody else, and we don't have any qualms about that. So I do see it as pertinent to the pagan community that these new forms of families be encouraged to flourish rather than discouraged and encouraged to fail.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, protecting others' freedom in one area, I think that really influences all of the other areas as well, right? As soon as you start, when you start oppressing one group, that trickles into all of the others as well.
Yeah, the picture that the Trumpies present of what freedom constitutes is baffling. It's like radical conformity at the point of a gun. And that's what they call freedom. And literally, it just baffles me. It is just a non-starter. I look at it and my jaw just drops.
Yeah. About the silver lining, I hope that out of all of this, folks get a lot more active in responding and looking at alternatives and going, no, we don't buy that. Here, let's try these other things instead.
And that is something that is increasingly happening as fewer and fewer people identify as being members of the religious institutions, the mainstream religious institutions. They're also, in many cases, throwing away those Bronze Age ideas about how you're supposed to behave. And they're asking themselves deep questions about what actually makes a meaningful life. What really does make me happy? And those are among the most important questions there are. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can I live well in relation to myself, in relation to my community, in relation to the planet? You solve that and you're ready to die. You've got it all sorted out.
Or ready to live another 90 years, how about?
Exactly, yes. Yeah. A very happy, satisfied 90 years that leaves the world a better place than it was when you got here.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things. I do feel like the advancement of minority religions writ large is another thing that's really important. Mm-hmm. You know, we have this very large growing population of people, which is kind of catching up to where Europe is, of people who self-identify as spiritual but not religious, by which they mean, I'm doing my own thing. I'm not signing on to somebody else's rule set or value set. I would argue that they're still religious if they've got practices and values and a cosmology. I'd say that's still a religion, but it may be a religion of one. Mm-hmm. And that's fine.
Well, I suspect they're also distinguishing in that they don't necessarily have a pantheon or a theology that they're
true.
Right. Because true. There is such that, and this is a very Western bias of seeing religion as tied to deity, where, you know, there's many other parts of the world and other types of religions that's not the case. But I think that in the Western world, we very much think of religion is, well, which God do you believe in?
Or yes.
What version of that God, right? Because yes. If we get to go to the Abrahamic religions, it's all the same God, but they have their kind of own
right
takes on
which one.
Which of his prophets are you into?
Yes, which one true religion do you subscribe to?
Yeah.
because there's so many of them out there. Yeah, so I think we're going to see a lot of change in the next 20 or 30 years. I don't think that the way humanity is operating right now is sustainable. I think that this pandemic is leading a lot of people to reassess what they actually need in their lives. Mm-hmm. And how valuable just having time is, time with their families, time with themselves, time to be creative.
Yeah.
And I I don't think we're going back to normal. I don't think the world's going to be the same after this. It wasn't after the 1918 pandemic, and I don't think it's going to be after this one either.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure that's a bad thing. I mean, it's bad for the people who die, obviously. I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah. But there's tremendous opportunity in it.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and like you're saying, I certainly don't want to downplay any of the suffering, because there is a tremendous amount of suffering on just so many levels. But we do really have that opportunity to come out of this with a different perspective and different, you know, really evaluating what we really want, what we really care about, and how do we live in a way that's going to meet that, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's been, I just discovered it's been just a little over 6 years now since I finally got a good cocktail of antidepressants that actually pulled me out of the depression I'd been living in since I was seven. And it's not a big surprise to me that I've been incredibly productive during those 6 years. I mean, I wrote a book and I've done all this stuff. Because I don't have an anvil around my neck, right? I mean, it's
a difference. Yeah.
Yes. When you're trying to run a race, it's really kind of hard with that big metal thing clanking around your neck. And one of the things that I realize is that 6 years is such an eye blink of time, and yet so much can happen. Mm-hmm. You know, 6 years ago, we were in the second term of the Obama administration, and it seemed like things were kind of moving in a good direction, if not fast enough. And now we're where we are now. And I think that that's both daunting and hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
Things can change quickly. And my hope is that they're going to in a way that's really positive. And a part of what I'm working to do with Atheopaganism is to frame models for how we can have relationships with one another and with the earth that will persist through the chaos of the coming time that we can expect to be pretty, pretty chaotic.
Yeah. And feel pretty good while we're at it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, happiness is, it's right up there in the list of things, you know, to increase happiness, increase kindness in the world, increase sustainability, you know, with the ecosystem. That's the thing.
Yeah. Which people, I think are valuable on their, you know, in their own right, but also that influences everything else, right? Like you were saying, the happiness and simply your productivity in basically every other part sphere of your life, right?
Yes. And my relationships with other people. And I mean, there are just so many ways that, you know, unhappiness is contagious.
Mm-hmm.
But so is happiness. Because people who are happy tend to be kind and compassionate. And that helps. Even people who are suffering, when they receive kindness and compassion, they feel better.
Yeah.
So fostering that in the world, I think, is really an important thing. I mean, the Buddhists have been saying this for thousands of years. But that, just because it's old doesn't make it wrong, which is sort of the inverse of what I usually say about pagan ancient traditions, which is usually ancient ways are neither ancient nor ancient wisdom is neither ancient nor wisdom. I feel as though there's another piece here and I'm not putting my finger on it.
Well, specifically coming back to the Atheopagan society, though, how might the society help to foster this future that we're envisioning?
Well, for one thing, it can help to promote the visibility of paganism generally and of non-theist paganism specifically to the public at large. And I don't mean that in a proselytizing sense, like knocking on people's doors and, hey, have you heard the good news of no God? Instead, what I'm just talking about is making this available to people. Being aware of it as an available option is not the same thing as trying to force somebody into it. And we must always be aware that proselytizing is it's a violent act. It's a deeply invasive attempt to try to commandeer someone else's spirituality and make it follow yours. It's not a good thing.
Yeah.
But putting the word out that this is something real, that it has some institutional standing, which seems to matter to a lot of people, although not to pagans so much, and that we have publications, we have resources available, we can convene conferences. There are so many things that could possibly happen. It would be tricky, I think, to convene a conference because I would want to offset the whole carbon footprint of the travel to get to it. I'm supposed to go to Paganicon over the Labor Day weekend, and I'm paying $35 to offset the carbon for those flights. So it can be done.
And teach everyone to compost at the conference too. Have them sign something that they promise they'll compost when they're home.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think that would work, but you know.
Well, but at least. I've been pretty disappointed at some pagan gatherings about, the degree of just unconsciousness around single-use plastic containers and
styrofoam
and littering and just a sheer lack of conscientiousness about cleaning up after yourself and being responsible about consumption.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that that's true of all pagans by any means, but there are those for whom it is true, and it's very frustrating. So if we were able to do a model conference with a zero carbon, and I'm just making this up as we're talking, so this isn't a plan at all, but
yeah.
With a zero carbon footprint and full recycling and, reusable dishes and all that kind of stuff, maybe that would ripple. Maybe it would start to happen in other pagan environments.
Or negative carbon, even better, right?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Because that's what we need. Zero carbon is not enough. So, at the beginning of the journey of this organization, obviously everything's going to be limited by resources, but it's exciting. It's hopeful to me to create an institutional container for these ideas that ensure that they'll persist.
Mm-hmm.
Continue kind of being out there working to advance its ideas.
And at the moment, it's still in its infancy. We're still working on all of the documentation and all of that, but we'll definitely be keeping all of you updated at the progress. And when there's a website available, you'll know about that. So,
yes. And the organization as currently envisioned is all volunteer. If it were to come into some money and decide that it needed an administrator or something, it has the power to do that. But as it is right now, the organization is envisioned as all volunteer, so nobody's making money on it. And the books and budget will always be open to the public. Full transparency is a core value of what we want to be about with this. There have been a lot of problems with pagan organizations over time, either serving as cash cows for individuals or just being mismanaged financially. you know, up to and including people embezzling from them. And we're going to make very sure that that it doesn't devolve to the benefit of anyone, including me. Mm-hmm. And that that the books are open so everybody can see them and know what's going on with them.
And as you mentioned, it's not a membership organization. There are no dues. You don't have to be contributing financially in order to be participating or receiving any of the benefits.
That's correct. Yes. I mean, we may, like, if I write a second book and publish it through the organization, the book will be sold. It won't be given away.
Yeah.
Unless we find somebody to sponsor giving it away, which would be great. But in terms of receiving the quarterly e-newsletter, participating in the Atheopagan Facebook group, calling yourself an Atheopagan, ordaining yourself as clergy, you can do all that stuff and never spend a nickel. And, you know, this is central to our idea that everybody is equal. Everybody's clergy if they want to be. And the point of the institution is to serve as a voice and a creator of resources for the community, not to try to codify the community into some sort of army or something.
But it seems like a sort of the natural next step for growth. And especially making sure that it doesn't, that the Atheopagan community doesn't become like a cult around a person, particular personality, or that it's, that we're able to keep it open and share it rather Absolutely. Than it being about, all about Mark or all about whoever, right?
Right. And increasingly that has worried me because I've been producing the vast majority of the material. And so I'm sort of seen as this leader figure, and I am a leader figure. I don't deny that. I mean, leadership is a real thing. Mm-hmm. But what I think of myself as is as a founder, not as a an executive, a ruler, or a director, or something like that. I'm not that, and I don't want to be that, and I don't want Atheopaganism ever to turn into a cult that would allow anybody to rise into that sort of a position. So to be honest, I've learned from organizations that I've been involved with before about how not to do this. I've seen some pretty hairy stuff. And as far as I'm concerned, super high integrity and super high transparency are the ways forward for paganism really to get traction in the mainstream community and be seen as a legitimate option to choose.
Yeah.
So I wanted to remind people also that we do have an email address for questions and comments. And that is the Wonder Podcast Qs. So the Wonder Podcast QS at gmail.com. And if we get your message, we'll reply within a day or two for sure. And we welcome your suggestions for topics. Soon we're going to start having interviews with folks on the show. So those will be interesting as well.
And let us know if you think of somebody that you would love to hear us interview.
Yes. Absolutely. I can think of a bunch of people that would be really exciting to interview. We'll close with that for today, I think. And we hope that you've enjoyed spending this time with us. We certainly appreciate your time listening to the podcast. So be well, and we'll see you again soon.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Yucca.